out of it, drawing lungfuls of smoke from a small cylinder of compressed leaves, not unlike the tobacco popular among Imperial Guardsmen. The habit was a lot less common among the Tau. This one would pay the price for it. His addiction presented Karras with a perfect means by which to quickly deal with the armored threat. Voss, Salarian, and Routh called in, confirming their readiness to drop on the patrolling squads and their drones. "You ready?" asked Karras. Zeed nodded and rolled his armored shoulders. At a single thought impulse, a rune on his retinal display switched from red to green. His lightning claws gleamed with the power field now activated around them. "On your mark, scholar!" Karras slung his bolter and drew his combat knife. "Do it!" They leapt over the railing together, propelling themselves out over their targets in a wide arc. Heavy in full armor, they dropped fast. Zeed struck the ground right among his marks. Before they could gasp, three were down, carved apart with ease. The others barely had time to raise weapons. Zeed was a tornado of slaughter among them, a dark blur of long razors and ceramite shell, apparently unhindered by the jump pack at all. Blue gore splashed armor and dirt. Bodies collapsed like toppled dolls. Karras hit the tank's turret just behind the gunner and thrust his knife straight into the alien's skull. He tugged it free, then hauled the body out of the hatch and tossed it. It bounced off the sloping sides of the tank before it hit the dirt. He pulled a frag grenade from his webbing and pulled the pin, then dropped it into the hatch and leaned back. A sharp crack, an outpouring of thick smoke. A side hatch was thrown open, and one blood-stained, wounded Tau crawled out groaning, followed a second later by another. They lay on the ground, desperately trying to staunch the blood flow from grievous shrapnel wounds. Atop the tank, Karras raised his bolter to his shoulder and put two silenced rounds in them, one in each skull. "Report," he voxed to the others.
"Talon 2, targets eliminated," replied Routh.
The others called in their kills. Karras turned towards the main entrance and saw an access panel on the wall just right of it. Unbidden, his mind threw up a memory. Morant, hacking the Vata back at Alel al-Tarag, while he, Routh, and Carland held off the retaliating Tau. Sorrow hit him like a chill gust of wind. Copley's people had been irradiated in the aftermath of Coldwave's nuclear blast. They'd had to go outside the Storm Ravens to restore systems. Soon, they'd be dropping with Scimitar's squad for the main assault. But each of the Arcturus troopers was already beginning to suffer the first signs. This would be their last mission.
"Let it bring them some honor, at least."
He shook himself clear of such thoughts. It was not the time. "Ghost, one of those bodies is a fireblade. He'll have an access card on him. Get it." Zeed found the Tau officer quickly, easy to distinguish by his white cloak, black braid, and the honor markings on his armor. The access card was around his neck, a disc of flexible polymer with Tau glyphs on it. Zeed ripped it free and tossed it to Karras, who was already over by the access panel.
"Watcher, Prophet, Omni, back up on the walkway, ready to breach those emergency exits. Novas, flash and clear when I give the go."
Confirmation came back from all three. Then the word that each was in position, charges placed, ready to breach. Karras gestured over to Zeed, who got into place. They'd crack the front door and go in together.
"Same for us," said Karras. "One Nova each, flash and clear, pistol first, understood?"
Zeed maglocked his claws to his cuisses and drew his bolt pistol. Karras swiped the card. Tau glyphs flashed on the access panel screen. The door began to crack open, halfway open now. He gave the order. From the walkway above, the crump of breaching charges could be heard. He and Zeed tossed their Nova grenades. Inside the building, twin flashes of blinding light exploded, each with a concussive bang. As soon as the flashes were over, Karras and Zeed were in, weapons coughing, ending the lives of every Tau they laid eyes on. Squat, stocky bodies in Earthcast uniforms went down, skulls and rib cages punched apart. From the upper level, Voices sounded over the vox.
Clear.
Clear. All clear, scholar.
Karras gestured to Zeed, and together they moved further into the building.
Good work, Talon, voxed the Death Spectre. Let's shut this place down so the real work can start. Keep it tight and check your corners. There may be more of them. None gets out alive. Omni, you're on demolitions. Get it done.
With pleasure, Alpha,
the Imperial Fist voxed back. 6 minutes later, primary power for the whole of Cardiza went down. The missile and railgun towers encircling the spaceport went dead, targeting AIs offline. Hollow displays suddenly blank. Karras ascended to the walkway outside and switched the vox over to the operational command channel.
Talon Alpha to Scimitar Alpha. All dark as ordered. Bring the light.
Don't get cocky, Talon,
snapped Broden through a crackle of static.
Just get your kill team to the next objective on time.
Confirm, Scimitar. Try not to get killed before we arrive. Talon out.
Karras smiled to himself, imagining Broden's expression. The Black Templar was probably cursing him to the deepest pits of the warp right about now.
Good.
The Death Spectre swung his plated legs over the railing of the walkway and dropped to the ground, fracturing rockcrete when he hit. He walked around to the front to reunite with the rest of the squad.
They'll be coming, said Salarian. TX-4s first, piranhas.
Voss nodded.
Fastest response on the ground. If we go by the rooftops, we'll be spotted from the air as the sun comes up. Any fighters on sight will be taken to the air as we speak.
We'll stay low, said Karras,
leading them out through the station's main gate.
Stick to the streets where our stealth systems still give us some edge. They'll be bringing out armor and infantry in force, setting up at least one defensive perimeter around the spaceport landing fields. We need to move fast, but I want us undetected for as long as possible. Keep to the shadows and follow me.
Chapter 45. In the spaceport's air control center, located at the top of the tower overlooking all three of the broad circular landing fields, members of the fire and earth castes alike were in a frenzy. The soldiers were relaying information to Commander Coldwave and taking orders. The techs were desperately trying to switch facility systems over to secondary power sources as quickly as possible. Local backup generators couldn't power the defenses. They were too low yield. The most immediate solution was to draw from the cold fusion station at Kit Tech, 300 kilometers to the west-southwest. It would take around 11 minutes. Fast, but not nearly fast enough. Damage reports were flooding in. A massive fire was spreading out of control near the northeast wall. The geothermal power station just west of there was a ruin, no chance of repair. Dozens lay dead inside and around it. At the seven-minute mark, word of airstrikes came in. By the time the spaceport's main systems did come back online, Black Eagle and the three Storm Ravens of Reaper Flight had laid waste to 90% of the perimeter anti-air systems. The last minutes of darkness before dawn were bright with flame. In the hangar where he waited impatiently to depart, Coldwave took a calming breath, centered himself, and studied the view on the hollow monitor. Earthcast and fire warriors bustled around him like agitated bees, racing to finish takeoff preparations or ready their gear for combat. The visual feed showed him a horizon ablaze. He opened a comm channel to the Fireblades on site and his senior support staff and said,
"Initiate Bastion protocols! Ready yourselves for battle! By the glory of the greater good and the will of the Aun, we will show them what it means to put one's hand in the Daggerhead's jaws!"
The Inquisitor was overseeing the loading of her personal cargo, while her two bodyguards loaded and primed their ugly, brutish weapons. The Space Marines glanced up when he stopped in front of them. The Inquisitor did not look his way. She continued her work, but he knew she had registered him in her peripheral vision.
"Soon, I will go to meet your Death Watch in battle," he told the Space Marines. They will not survive it.
He was defiant. The one called Lucianos grinned. Cabanon kept loading rounds into a bolt pistol magazine as he said,
Better for all were you to stay on this ship with Milady, Chasseau. Who will speak your words to the Ethereal Council if you lie dead on these landing fields?
But I will not die, said Coldwave. Instead, I will show you why the Tau need fear no one. Our destiny cannot be denied.
Cabanon shrugged.
Grand words, Blueskin. But should the killing of Talon Squad prove beyond you, let me put your mind at ease. They may get through you, but they will not get through us. Milady will get off-world and deliver the data and proposals to your Ethereal High Council. Again, I say, better you stay back from the fight and live to accompany her.
My survival is not in doubt, snapped Coldwave.
He whirled to face Epsilon, his joy at the thought of the coming battle robbed somewhat by his anger at the insolence and arrogance of her murderous guards.
Inquisitor!
He barked.
Caution your space marines! All three of you yet draw breath only through my good graces and the good graces of the Aun. Know that even our patience and tolerance have their limits. Your protectors tread perilously close to them.
Epsilon threw Cabanon a mildly chastising glance, then turned her attention to Coldwave.
I will watch the battle with great interest, honored hunter. I have no doubt you will be victorious this day. We shall soon be bound for Tau, and the salvation of both your people and mine will be assured. Fight well, and may the winds favor you.
This last struck him, for it was an ancient thing said among plains hunters before the Tau had yet become a unified race. Staying downwind of prey was critical. Winds that changed suddenly could ruin a hunt.
She knows far more about us than I thought. Truly, we must kill her as soon as is prudent. Until then, ever more caution. We have climbed into our cots with a serpent most poisonous.
Her words stayed with him as he stormed away. But they passed from his mind entirely as he started climbing the metal stairs that led to his battlesuit's cockpit. I am ready, hunter, his battlesuit seemed to sing to him as he climbed inside. I have waited for this. His techs plugged in his neural connectors and pilot support systems, then sealed him in. Hollow displays and neuro-optical projections flickered to life all around him. He gave himself over to fusing his mind with the advanced AI support systems and felt an overwhelming sense of power, almost indescribable, flood his mind and body. He felt uplifted, transformed. Many battlesuit pilots became hopelessly addicted to that feeling. For some, disconnecting, living outside them, caused an acute form of depression. Coldwave had known it once in his first days of piloting an XV-8. He had hated the feeling of inadequacy, of weakness, whenever separated from the machine. Had he not soon overcome it, he would never have risen to Chasseau. It had not affected him since. But still, there was no feeling quite like engaging a foe in a battlesuit. Nothing even close. It had been so long, he almost felt grateful to the intruders. Today would be a great day. Within the next hour, he would feel more alive than in all the years since he and his people had defeated the Tall Ones and rescued this pitiful world. He tested the link's neural response times. Glyph readouts told of speeds even better than expected. The Earthcast had been working hard. His kills today would honor their efforts.
Cabanon, said the Inquisitor.
The Iron Hands veteran looked over at her.
Milady?
I have told you before. I will not repeat myself again. Cease your antagonizing of the Chasseau. Our accord is tenuous enough. Press him like that again, and he will likely try to kill you. Both of you.
He will find that beyond him, I assure you, grunted Cabanon.
You underestimate him, Space Marine, replied Epsilon angrily. Perhaps today he will show you the error of that. In any case, his patronage is critical. You know what we fight for. You know what we seek and what it could mean.
Cabanon stopped what he was doing and turned his head to face her.
I am Adeptus Astartes, lady, a sworn Xenos killer. I have allied myself to your cause. Turn brother Space Marines over to a Xenos race I detest. And do not murder them, though my honor and oaths demand it. All of this I have done because I understand the possibilities, the promise. You confided in us because you knew that only Lucianus and I would understand, that we alone had the vision to go to the necessary extremes.
She held his gaze, accustomed to feeling dominant, in control, but not this time. This time she faltered. She had seen something unexpected in the Iron Hand's usually unreadable face. Commitment, absolute and fierce. She realized then that he was every bit as invested as she. He had already paid a high personal price to come this far. Lucianus, too.
I am a Space Marine, m'lady,
Cor Cabanon rumbled as he resumed loading and oiling his weapons.
And I must find out Rashak for the sake of all Space Marines. Especially those I have betrayed for it.
Chapter 46. Black Eagle cut across the sky above Cardiza, upper and lower holds filled with hardened warriors, every last one eager to get groundside and into the fight. Broden in the front hold cast an eye over his kill team, all in full plate, armed to the teeth. Deathwatch iconography gleaming in the light of the red looms that signaled an imminent drop. The Thunderhawk's dorsal-mounted turbo-laser destructor had already made rubble and slag of the spaceport's deadly perimeter defense towers. Not alone, of course. The time taken for that would have seen power restored too soon. Black Eagle would have been cut from the sky. The Storm Ravens had done their part, sharing the work. Though the Tau had power again, it was too late to matter. The spaceport's static defenses were out of the equation, a critical element of the operation achieved. Not quite freedom of the skies, though. The moment the Xenos recognized that they were under attack, aircast fighter pilots had been ordered out onto runways. Several AX-3 Razor Sharks were now in the air, racing to engage. But engage what? The Death Watch gunships were far from standard. Stealth fields, radar-absorbing plate, heat signature dampers, electronic countermeasures, all blessings of the machine cult of Mars. There was nothing on Tau scanners to lock onto. The aircast would need a visual in order to engage.
Time until sunrise, Broden voxed his pilot, Tarvel.
16 minutes, my lord. The sky is lightning already.
We'll be on the ground in 3, thought the Black Templar. We just needed darkness to get us in.
Any sign of those fighters?
Our specs returns show 3 running defensive sweep patterns over the airfields, my lord. Correction, one of them just broke away, heading east.
East. Reaper 3 was flying into the LZ on that vector, the Dreadnought, Chiron in its grapples, and Spear Team 3 in its hold. A third of Major Copley's special forces operators. Broden needed the Lamenter on the ground, wreaking havoc. He couldn't afford for Reaper 3 to be knocked out of the sky. Reaper 3's pilot, Dargan, would have noted the Razor Shark breaking off towards him. Most likely the Tau were tracking him visually from the ground, following the passage of his glowing jets across the sky. The Razor Shark wouldn't get a lock. It would need to get close and target the Storm Raven manually. Still, its speed and the power of its weaponry presented a problem. Broden opened a link to Reaper flight.
Scimitar Alpha to all Storm Ravens. Reapers 1 and 2 are to support Reaper 3.
take down that shark and escort to the drop zone. Once the Dreadnought and Spear Team 3 are on the ground, provide close support. Confirm orders.
The Reaper pilots confirmed. Broden addressed Tarval again.
Time to drop sight.
1 minute, 40 seconds, my lord, reported the Thunderhawk pilot.
Be ready. We're about to take a lot of heat from the ground. I want all weapon systems brought to bear.
Always ready, my lord. They made me that way,
Broden grunted. At first, he'd been offended that a Thunderhawk, especially the one assigned to carry him, was to be piloted by a non-adeptus Astartes. Outside the Death Watch, it was unheard of. To the Ordo Xenos, however, space marine assets were too important to leave in a cockpit when they were most needed on the ground. The Ordo instead recruited decorated veterans from the Imperial Navy, luring them in with the promise of unparalleled aircraft, technological resources, honor, and glory. With a price, of course. Those that accepted were modified. They became, what? Man-machines, Broden supposed. Like servitors in some ways, but not quite. They became the living brains of their aircraft, fused with them permanently, the airframe becoming their body, responding to their thoughts the way his power armor responded to his. He still wasn't sure he approved, but he had seen the results. He could not doubt their effectiveness.
Scimitar! He barked at the battle brothers in front of him. Final weapons, checks, and litanies. Make your obeisance. Bless your weapons and bring honor to our name this day. For honor and the Emperor, bellowed the kill team in unison.
Valo, as always, bowed his head and added a brief oath to the Omnissiah. Not something Broden liked, but the rest of Scimitar didn't see the God Emperor quite as he did. They did not consider him truly divine in the religious sense. Blind they were, and the teachings of their chapter woefully incomplete. But forgiving their ignorance was the only way to make things work. He had come to terms with that on his first deployment as Alpha. As they were offering obeisance to their war gear, he opened a channel to the upper hold.
Spear teams 1 and 2,
he voxed, addressing Copley's own squad, and the squad assigned to her second, Captain Viggs.
90 seconds till drop. Have your people ready, Archangel. I will personally punish any slips. The Death Watch demands excellence of those who deploy in support of it. Your people may be sickened, weakened, but they have a duty to fulfill. Be glad of this chance. Today will be your last shot at glory in the God Emperor's name. A last chance to elevate your souls for all eternity to come. Do not squander it.
In the upper hold, Copley could barely contain her anger at his words. Yes, her people were dying, but they knew it well enough. They did not need it spelled out for them by one who was immune to the very thing that was killing them. Back at Chathar Nahadik, her stormtroopers had taken powerful meds to counteract the worst of the symptoms during this final operation. But if any of them lived through this, it would not be for very long. Days at most. Truly, Cold Wave had killed them the moment he had opted to destroy Alel Atarag.
It will be a cruel, slow death, she thought. But the Templar bastard is right about one thing. That the death is slow gives us this one shot. Shadowbreaker can still succeed. Arcturus can go out on a high note. My people are ready. And if the Emperor is watching over us, he will let us die in battle as true warriors deserve.
The thought of a slow, withering death, of vomiting greater and greater amounts of blood while sores erupted on the skin, while organs failed and liquefied, such thoughts chilled her blood. A pulse round to the skull would be welcome. For all she hated the Xenos, all the years she had dedicated herself to the war against them, it would be better to die at the hands of a worthy enemy, a smart enemy, an enemy she could respect. And she had always held a grudging respect for the Tau. Anything less would have been self-delusion. Defeating the Blueskins today at Cadiza would do little to hurt their expansion. They were relentless, vigorous, filled with the fires of ambition and entitlement. They would continue to encroach on Imperial space, bringing into the fold other races with promises of unity and prosperity for all. It hardly mattered if those promises were a glamour only. They worked. And one day the Imperium, her beloved Imperium, would find itself in crisis, having underestimated the allure of the Tau Va. Human worlds would fall like dominoes.
But I'll be dead by then. I have today to make a difference. Only today.
Archangel to Scimitar Alpha, she voxed, making sure her voice was loud enough in the hold for her people to hear.
Arcturus stands ready. Do your part, and we will do ours. Archangel out.
She closed the link. Viggs was looking at her with that expression again. He no longer tried to hide it now that he knew they would soon die. She hardened hers.
Don't say it, man. Please don't. I know well enough, but let it pass unsaid for both our sakes.
He had loved her for years. He had never spoken of it, but she knew, as all women know when a man's gaze lingers over long and warm on them. Even when they can't see his face behind an omni-shield helm and resp mask. She had appreciated his affection somewhat, deep down. What person, man or woman, hated to be valued and adored? But she had resented it too. Viggs saw her as she had never allowed herself to. He saw a woman and desired her. She had spent her whole life building herself into something else, a warrior and leader every bit the equal of her men. As a woman, it was not enough to be equal. She'd had to work far harder than any male officer. The Militarum had denied her her due so many times, throwing her over for promotion, choosing men with half her record or less. The Inquisition had not been so blind. The Ordo Xenos had seen her worth. It had vindicated her.
Ordo service has been the best years of my life. I will not fail the Ordo now. Shadowbreaker will succeed. On my life, on the lives of my men, Shadowbreaker will succeed.
She checked the power cabling and connectors on her hotshot las gun, then ran a final check on the rest of her kit. Silenced bolt pistol, grenades, knife. She checked the stealth systems and photoreactive camouflage of her combat bodysuit and carapace armor, her helm optics, comms, and filters.
All green.
Gravity shifted. The Thunderhawk was swinging around on the drop zone. Noise erupted. Explosions. The rattle and smack of pulse cannon fire. The deep growl of the aircraft's twin-linked heavy bolters. The hiss and zap of its las cannons. Then the angry buzz and shuddering boom of the turbo-laser destructor.
All brace, voxed the pilot. Drop zone is hot.
Wake up, spear teams,
she shouted above the noise. Her people snapped to attention. She tried to ignore that a few were stifling wet coughs.
Time to do what we do best, she told them. Now, remind me one more time where you ugly, tough-looking sons of Grox were all born and raised.
Every right fist in the upper hold was suddenly thrust into the air. As one they roared, voices drowning out all else.
Elysia! Elysia!
Copley yelled back, her face split with a broad grin. There was a judder as the Thunderhawk's landing stanchions hit solid ground. The doors to the lower hold jerked open. Muted daylight was already flooding the space. Scimitar was charging out into battle. Copley heard the roar of a heavy flamer, the thump of a Deathwatch frag cannon. She was still grinning when she ran down the ramp to the lower hold, then led her people out at speed into the maelstrom that awaited. Up ahead of her, she immediately saw her objective, the atrium of the Cadiza spaceport main building. Behind it, the air-control tower thrust upwards into the early morning air, lights shining bright in the control center windows. Tau were everywhere, pouring onto the rooftops and walkways of the two large terminal buildings on either side. and from the roof and balconies of the atrium itself. On the ground, they fired from behind man-portable barricades of energy-absorbing alloys and ceramics. From all these places, they rained pulse, plasma, and ion fire towards the Thunderhawk and the Imperial forces which spilled out onto the Rock Crete. From Black Eagle's front ramp to the main entrance of the atrium lay 70 meters of open ground, ground that should have been impossible to cross. But the Thunderhawk's heavy bolters were chewing apart the Tau cover, forcing their heads down, tearing apart the bodies of any foolish enough to dare return fire. Even so, during the mad, breathless sprint towards the broad windows and glass doors of the atrium entrance, two members of Viggs's team, Keel and Arlen, were evaporated, turned to ash and burning scraps of cloth by a Tau-heavy weapon that managed to get off a blinding, stone-scorching blast. Black Eagle's hurricane bolters turned the offending position to rubble and dust. The screams of Tau wounded were drowned out by continued drumming, as the bolters then strafed the walkways left and right. Dozens of fire warriors were ripped to pieces. Weapons and bodies tumbled to the ground below. Copley registered all of this peripherally, but her focus was ahead of her. 10 meters. The Tau saw her getting closer to cover. They intensified their fire. Black Eagle punished them lethally for that, forcing them back down. Faster! 8 meters. The hurricane bolters couldn't cover every angle. The Tau were determined that spear teams 1 and 2 would not make the cover of the atrium. Faster, damn it! 6 meters. Pulse rounds sang through the air so close she felt their deadly heat through her combat suit. 4 meters. 2 meters. 1! Copley fired at the glass, weakening it. Then she charged straight through it, head tucked. The window exploded inwards. She skidded to a halt, lasgun raised. The atrium was wide and filled with light. There were slate-black hollow displays everywhere, on walls, on pillars, hanging from the metal beams of the high ceiling. But they were dead now. No timetables or safety information flickered and danced over them today. There were strange plants, too, blue in color, some reaching as high as the second-floor galleries. It would have been easy to imagine this place on a normal day, filled with a multitude of beings from all the races the Tau had embraced. A mix of military, commercial, political. Today, it was a battleground. Tau defenders burst from cover, or leaned from pillars to open fire. The Elysians dived for cover of their own, several tossed frags. There was a sharp staccato of explosions. Unbroken windows shook. Tau infantry staggered from cover. Uniforms stained blue, flesh punctured by deadly shrapnel. They were gunned down immediately. Others still were concussed and stumbled into view. Lasgun fire ended their lives. Those still fighting were soon suppressed and flanked. The last of these shot in the back as he tried to flee through the far exit. Spear one to Scimitar Alpha! Voxed Copley as her people secured the stairs on either side of the hall and proceeded to clear the second floor. We've taken the reception building, proceeding to objective. Broden's answer was terse, his focus given over to battle flow.
Be quick about it, woman. I want Epsilon found.
Copley's eyes narrowed. She cut the link.
Arrogant piece of...
Clearly, not all Adeptus Astartes were equal.
Second floor cleared, ma'am, voxed Viggs.
Copley ran up the right stairway. Viggs and his team were stacked at the end of the second-floor hallway by a row of broad doors that opened onto covered walkways outside. The doors to the left and right would take them to the east and west terminal buildings. East for atmospheric traffic, west for traffic going off-world. The central walkway was the one they wanted. It would take them to the main control tower. Viggs thrust his chin at its ornately carved doors.
No way we can just walk straight in, I suppose.
Copley knew he was grinning under his mask. She shook her head.
You know better.
The Tau would have rigged it to blow the minute they knew the spaceport was under attack. They'd know someone was coming for the control room.
Rooftop access?
She asked.
Stairs far left and right through those exits over there.
Addressing everyone, she said,
We're going up. There will be Tau still on the roof, so clear them out. We'll run lines from the roof to the control tower and go in through the windows.
They can blow the walkways if they want. It won't make a difference. But be ready. Get to cover the moment you're through the glass and secure the room for those coming in behind you. Clear?
Spear Team 1 took the left access. Spear Team 2 took the right. 2 minutes later, they crashed through several windows on the second floor of the air control tower and cleared that floor. In the main hall, they found two Vaters. Viggs didn't have to ask. The Tau would have rigged them too. There was only one stairwell leading up. Spear Team 2 took the lead.
Stack up on that door, Viggs told his team.
Copley's team covered them from the rear.
Smoke the stairwell on entry and go in on infrared, ordered Viggs. Come on, Ludo, you're my first footers. On 3, 2, 1.
Doors were kicked. Smoke was popped. Sergeant Gaman and Private Ludo raced in. Las gunfire lit the smoke like a strobe. There was a scream. Bodies dropped from the landings above, Tau and ISF both. The Elysian surged inside and began their ascent. Chapter 47.
Ghost, go high!
The Raven Guard didn't need to be told twice. At a mental command, his jump jets flared, launching him up and over onto the rooftop of the tallest hab. The rest of Talon went into cover, and shadow to shadow pushed up the street, closer to the Tau blockade at the intersection ahead. There were blockades at every intersection now, as Talon pushed closer to the spaceport and the rendezvous with the rest of the task force. Firecast patrols and drones were sweeping the streets and rooftops, looking for those that had blown the power station and the northeast silos. Karras and his kill team brothers evaded those they could and killed those they could not. The Blueskin response to the Imperial incursion had been swift and comprehensive, typical of Tau organization and efficiency. The spaceport town had never needed much in the way of a garrison. 200 infantry, a dozen devilfish transports, half that again in hammerhead tanks, 2 Skyray anti-air units. The defense towers had been designed to make the garrison all but redundant. The Tau hadn't imagined they might be brought down so easily from the inside. Karras peered out from the cover of a recessed doorway. Behind the barricades ahead brooded the sleek form of another TX-7 hammerhead. Deadly enough on its own, this one was accompanied by 12 fire warriors and their fireblade officer, plus 2 of those damned drones the Blueskins were always depending on. Sharp as his eyes and auto-senses were at this range, Karras needed to be sure neither of those flyers was a shield drone.
"Scholar,"
breathed Zed over the vox, "I've got a good vertical flank. Say the word." "Drone types," said Karras. There was a pause.
"Shield drones," said Zed. "Both of them."
That complicated things. Karras might destroy them with psychic force, but only if he had a solid line of sight on each. And the way they were positioned within the barricades, that would mean putting himself out in the open. His armor could soak up enough of the standard Tau small arms fire to give him a window on one of the drones, but the hammerhead's powerful railgun would be on him, stealth systems engaged or not, before he could crush the other. He couldn't kill it and shield himself at the same time. He called up the picked feed from the Raven Guard's helm and considered the enemy's relative positions. "Ghost," he voxed, "you'll drop right down on the left drone. The second you do, those troopers on the east edge of the barricade are going to turn their weapons on you. Don't give them time. The instant your drone is down, you jump back to cover."
"I can handle them, Scholar. I'll stick to them until they're meat."
"You won't. You'll jump as ordered. Clear?"
Zed snorted.
"Your game, your rules. Got it."
"Watcher, flank left. The minute both drones are down and Ghost is out of there, hit the front of that hammerhead with a thundershock grenade."
"EMP won't knock out a hammerhead, Karras, you know that."
"It will knock out the gun drones in its nose. You'll take them out, then turn your bolter on the infantry. Frag them if they cluster."
"Understood."
"Prophet, you'll flank right. Find cover and put crosshairs on the fireblade. When the shield drones go down, take his head off. After that, kill at will. The tower on the west side will be firing up at Ghost. Drop them."
"Moving off now," said Salarian.
Scholar,
said Voss, hefting his Infernus heavy bolter a little higher than usual, as if to say, put me to work. Karras nodded to him. You're with me, Omni. We're going right down the middle. I'll take out the right side shield drone first, but I'll be dangerously exposed after that while I deal with the Hammerhead's railgun. You'll suppress the infantry out in front. Bolt or flame or both, just keep them off me.
As good as done, Scholar.
Get yourselves into position. The chrono is ticking, and I could do without an earful from Broden. Black shapes separated from each other. 2 minutes later, the intersection erupted in violence. 3 minutes later, it was silent, awash with blood and black smoke. Not a single Tau drew breath. 5 minutes later, a patrol came across the scene of the carnage and called it in. Talon Squad was already half a kilometer away, moving at speed, pushing south to the landing fields, and the battle that was already raging there. Reaper 3 swung west for the spaceport landing grounds. Chiron, hanging under its tail, held there by Magna grapples, turned his optics to the fires and smoke below. To the left and right, Reapers 1 and 2 paced his craft, just a little to the rear in Delta formation, watching the skies and their scopes. There were still two Razor Shark fighters out there within striking distance. From this position, his view largely obscured by Black Hull, Chiron hadn't seen much of the fight with the first. He had heard the Vox chatter, had known one of the Tau jets was on an intercept course. At the last moment, as the Razor Shark was just opening fire, the other Storm Ravens had swept in on its flanks and torn it to pieces. Chiron had seen a flash, and then the burning wreckage had appeared in his vision as it spiraled groundward. It smashed into a large storage facility, igniting whatever was kept there. Settling into formation, the three Storm Ravens pressed on towards the spaceport. Broden's plan had tested Chiron's patience already. He had had to remain hooked up to the assault craft while it took down its share of the town's perimeter defenses during the initial assault window. Three of those towers lay in ruins, thanks to Flight Lieutenant Dargan and his gunship. As the Storm Raven had screamed away, Firecast soldiers had flooded onto rooftops with man-portable missile systems to try to close the new gaps in the perimeter. Stealthed, and with full electronic measures active, Reaper 3 was impossible to lock onto. Not invisible, however. At this altitude, just a few hundred meters up, the glow from her turbofan engines was visible from the ground. That was how Tau infantry had guided the Razor Shark in, and ultimately doomed it. As the three Storm Ravens cut the distance to the spaceport in half, then half again, bright pulse and plasma fire arced up into the night. Chiron growled. As he swung to and fro in the clutches of the Magna grapples, he felt helpless and frustrated. Xenos were firing on him, and he could not retaliate.
Get me groundside, he snarled, but only to himself.
There was no point taking it out on Dargan. He couldn't fly any faster. Besides, Chiron felt a strange kinship with the Storm Raven pilots. Not much of one, but it struck him that each was as permanently a part of his machine as he was himself. In essence, they were all loyal Imperial souls locked in mechanical bodies, living for duty, living through their duty. Maybe they were as he was. Maybe duty was all they had left. Had they lost everything else, just as he had? Several streams of pulse fire just missed him. A few of the rounds smacked into the tail of the craft, glowing there momentarily until their deadly energy dissipated, leaving a small black crater. Reaper 3 dropped a little altitude and angled slightly north. The others did likewise.
Be ready, Talon 6, Vox the pilot. You too, Spear Team 3, he added for the Elysians in the hold. Drop sight in view, and it looks damned hot down there.
Chapter 48. Broden and his kill team, under cover of the Thunderhawk's armored wings and hull, added their fire to the assault craft's own, helping to buy Spear Teams 1 and 2 the opening they needed to get into the atrium and begin their push to the air control center. Now they were inside, and Scimitar needed to be about its own objectives. Khadiza had three large oval landing fields. Fields 1 and 3 were given over to commercial traffic, surrounded by vast warehouses, refueling stations, and cargo loading bays. Field 2 was military, and likewise surrounded, but with barracks and a large armory. 1 and 3 boasted three large hangars apiece. Field 2 had only one, but it was double the size of any other. Somewhere in all this, Coldwave and Epsilon were readying for departure, trusting in the Firecast to eliminate the Imperial threat before takeoff. Broden didn't know where Epsilon intended to go from here. Further from the reach of the Ordo, he imagined, in order to continue her fell business with the Tau. It didn't matter. He wasn't going to let her get off-world. He would do what Talon and Arcturus had been unable to, those unworthy dogs. He was a breed apart, scion of the Black Templars, and he would prove it today for the honor of the God Emperor and the Primarch Rogal Dorn. To the west lay the main transit station serving the spaceport. A Tau thing, some kind of fusion-driven, high-speed magrail node that probably served commercial distribution interests most of the time. But it could be used for bringing Tau reinforcements right into the heart of the battle, and he couldn't allow that. Just west, about 300 meters, lay the closest of the commercial hangars attached to Field 1. The search would start there.
"Scimitar to Black Eagle," he voxed. "We're clear. Take me to the air. Keep us covered as you rise. Once you're up, I want that transit station obliterated. I need it unusable. Bring it down. Is that understood?"
Still firing furiously, the Thunderhawk cycled up its turbines.
"Black Eagle copies, my lord. Good hunting."
"Good hunting," grunted Broden.
With Adeptus Astartes' battle sign, he signaled his kill team, including the Crimson Fist Tech Marine Vallo and his two slaved servitors, to make speed for the first of the hangars. Black Eagle was nosing into the air. Scimitar broke from the cover of her shadow and pounded across open rockcrete, Broden the slowest in Terminator armor, but moving with all the alacrity that the almost indestructible suit could manage. Fire warriors pressed forward, eager to exploit the advantage of having their targets on open ground. They sent a withering hail of fire at Scimitar, only to have their rounds shrugged off. Adeptus Astartes' power armor more than equal to the task. That eagerness to exploit what the Tau thought was a great opportunity was in fact their undoing. From the cockpit of Black Eagle, Tarvel saw them and turned his gunship's bolters on them, shredding the Tau in a wash of mass-reactive shells. The landing field became wet with Xenos blood. Smoking bodies twitched. Then she was up, swinging her boxy nose east, dipping to bring her massive dorsal weapon to bear on the transit station. The turbolaser destructor's coils began to glow, and an angry buzz filled the air. Black Eagle loosed a bright blast that struck the station building dead on, turning it to dust and burning ruins. Then she flared her jets and hauled herself higher into the air.
"Target eliminated, Scimitar. Reaper 3 reports arrival in 1 minute. Black Eagle will stay on station to provide air support for Reaper 3 during the drop. With your permission, my lord."
Broden was running full tilt, not stopping to fire at the few Tau left alive, as they took shots at him from the handful of barricades that remained intact.
"Permission granted," he replied. Then, over the command channel, "Reaper 3, your drop zone is landing field 3. Talon 6, you will give fire support to Spear Team 3, who are tasked with searching each of the hangars east of the main terminal building. Be swift, but operate with caution, and stay in contact. Reaper Flight will offer close support from the air. All confirm."
Responses were loud and clear.
"There are still two Razor Sharks up here," voxed Ventius of Reaper 1. "Orders regarding them, my lord." "Don't let them draw you away from the battle here," Broden said. "The Tau have yet to show their teeth.
The Razor Sharks must have been ordered to hold back for a reason. They may be awaiting more air support, or perhaps some opening we cannot foresee. Watch your auspexes. Keep me apprised. We must be ready.
Power armor allowing far faster running than Terminator armor. His scimitar brothers had already reached the outer walls of Hangar 1 West. They slammed their backs against it. A moment later, Broden joined them. Several thick metal doors led inside. The main entrance was the massive rolled shutter through which aircraft could enter or exit. This was closed and far too heavy to breach. No windows to look through either, just plasteel-reinforced rockcrete, and the metal side doors all sealed. A simple breach and clear. Broden was used to going in hard. In Terminator armor, impervious to most fire, he would also be going in first.
"Stack up on south. West and north," he said. "Two to a door. Kanan, you're with me, but you'll stay well back until I give the word. Once I'm in, the rest of you will monitor my picked feed, mark your targets, and breach on my order."
"Affirmative, Alpha,"
grated Vallo, voice modulated by the permanent augmetics that covered his nose and mouth. The others replied in kind.
"On your say then, brother," said Kanan of the Doom Eagles, bolt pistol in his right hand, chainsaw gently purring in his left. He looked more than ready.
The apothecary's ferocity in close quarters was something to behold. Broden stepped out, faced the door, then, having activated the energy field around his power fist, threw a blistering left that exploded it inwards in a shower of hot metal shards. He surged inside. Immediately, from positions of cover all over the interior of the hangar, from both ground level and upper gantries, a deadly rain of fire began scoring the air in bright white and blue. Plasma rounds struck his breastplate. Pulse rounds scored his greaves and cuisses. The barrage was intense, like being caught in a rainstorm. Broden grinned beneath his fearsome ceramite muzzle. Tactical dreadnought armor was made for far harsher storms than this. Far from being pushed back, he boldly stepped forward into the blizzard of Xenos rounds, mocking the efforts of the Blueskins to stop him. Marking tau positions pointedly for the brothers following his picked feed, he lifted the nose of his assault cannon and pressed the trigger. The clustered barrels began spinning. A muzzle flare licked out, 2 meters long. The weapon's unique, deadly whine filled the air. Rounds began chewing cover apart, cutting the bodies behind it to pieces. Screams were drowned out. Fire warriors died by the dozen, unable to draw back without exposing themselves.
"Breach," said Broden almost casually.
Two other doors exploded inwards. Sundstrom's frag cannon coughed. Van Velden's heavy flamer roared. The silenced Stalker bolters and bolt pistols of the others made barely any sound at all. All too soon, the hangar fell silent. Smoke and dust swam in the air. Blood dripped from gantries above.
"Clear," said Broden. "Not even a ship in this one. We press on. The chrono is against us."
As they were turning to leave, Samit of the Night Watch, ever the most observant, spotted something on a plasteel support pillar, halfway up towards the ceiling. It was small and dark, with the tiniest of blinking lights. He looked at the other pillars holding up the hangar roof. On each, he found a similar small device. He realized the blinking was accelerating, rapidly. He almost managed a shouted warning before the tau charges detonated, ripping through the hangar, filling the space with bright fire, shearing straight through rockcrete and plasteel. Broden and his kill team barely had time to look up, as blazing heat and light engulfed them, and the whole structure collapsed upon their heads. Chapter 49. Kurdiza was built by men. Its first incarnation was so far back in the colonized history of the planet that records of those days no longer existed. There was a single, simple reason for its location, here on the lower edge of the mid-northern latitudes, southwest of the Gada mountain range. It was here
that the first ever human craft had landed. No one alive on Tychonis today knew this, of course. Large sections of the spaceport and the surrounding town had been rebuilt many times. Sometimes an accident, usually a lifter crash or a plasma generator explosion, was the cause. At one time it had been the assaults of the dreaded Dark Eldar in the days before the Tau had driven them off. In the years since, Tau efficiency being what it was, only minor changes had ever been made. The Blueskins were content to adapt human structures to their needs. Ugly and boxy as they were, they served their function. The air-controlled tower was no different. Much as it contained significant Tau technology and personnel, it was still a typically human place, its layout more or less the same as such towers on countless Imperial worlds. From the second-floor admin rooms into which they had crashed via zipline from the roof of the spaceport atrium, Copley had led Spear Teams 1 and 2 up flight after flight of metal stairs, gunning down defenders as they went, ascending at last to the highest level. Now, with Spear Team 2 stacked against the doorway, ready to breach into the main corridor of the uppermost floor, Copley and Spear Team 1 hung back, keeping to the landing just below, giving Team 2 room to work. Copley knew the Tau would have rigged the door on the other side. There would be fire warriors lying in wait, highly alert, senses sharp with adrenaline. All the Ordo's cards were on the table now. Coldwave and his forces knew about the Thunderhawk, about Scimitar, about the survival of the force that had attacked Alal Atarag. If the Blueskins didn't quite recognize the precise level of threat they faced, Epsilon and her traitorous bodyguards certainly did. They knew better than to take an Ordo task force and 3 Death Watch kill teams for granted, even with an entire hostile world against them. The Inquisitor would make sure Coldwave understood what he was up against.
"Door's rigged, ma'am," Viggs said.
"Countercharges, Captain. You know the drill."
"Copy that."
Viggs had Willicks, his best with explosives, set up small charges on lock and hinges, then pulled everyone back to a safe distance.
"They'll be in the halls," Copley told everyone. "Probably barricades at corridor junctions and corners. The control room entrance will be well defended. Expect overlapping fields of fire. They may have gun drones, possibly shield drones. You all know how to deal with that? Questions?"
She knew there would be none. They knew their jobs, knew the protocols.
"All set," she told Viggs. "Give the word."
"Breach in 3, Viggs said.
2, 1.
The charges cracked loud in the stairwell, blowing the door inwards. The Tau charges on the other side immediately detonated, filling the air with the bright, hot flash of a lethal plasma reaction. Pulse and plasma fire immediately began pouring through the blasted doorway. But Viggs had his people in cover, well back from the opening. He signaled 2 of them, Dewa and Yan. They moved up into the hard cover of the doorframe. Yan tugged a grenade from its webbing. Dewa was carrying a grenade launcher and adjusted the round selector on its fat magazine instead. He threw Yan a wink and a nod. Yan pulled the pin, counted to 3, and tossed his grenade. A 2 count later, the bright flash and snap of a powerful electromagnetic pulse reached them from down the hall. All enemy fire suddenly stopped. Dewa leaned out and fired a round from his launcher. It exploded right among the Tau, hot shrapnel ripping through Xenos flesh where it was least armored. Cries of agony rang out.
"First fire team," barked Viggs. "Smoke, optics and infrared, secure the corridor."
Dewa hit his weapon's round selector and fired again, filling the corridor with heavy smoke. 4 stormtroopers surged past him, weapons raised and ready. The sharp crack of lasgun fire sounded, then died off abruptly.
"Barricades cleared, Captain," reported Sergeant Vanoff. "We're in the cover of the walls. They have another nest covering this position from right down the hall. Permission to take it, sir?"
"Hold in cover," said Viggs.
He led the rest of Spear Team 2 into the corridor. Copley and her team held back, still covering the rear, alert for any sign of Tau flankers on the stairwell below.
Viggs voxed her after he had assessed things from the first barricade.
Two gun drones, but the EMP took them out. Greer, destroy those things before they come back online. 4 Blueskin infantry killed. 1 injured.
There was a pause, then the bark of a single pistol shot.
5 killed. Team 2 moving to clear other nests now. Team 1 clear to move up.
Morrow, Coulson, said Copley, turning to 2 of her men. Each nodded their helmed heads.
Hold here. Razor sharp. You understand me?
Razor sharp, mum,
replied Morrow, the older of the 2. He slapped the other man's shoulder.
You and me get the dog's job this time. Tough stuff.
Coulson groaned resignedly. Copley ordered the rest of her people up and through the breach. Viggs and his team had used the same tactics on the second barricade. So long as shield drones were in grenade range, they could be knocked down briefly with EMP. Outside that range, they were a nightmare, allowing Tau sharpshooters to punish attackers at long range with almost total impunity.
Thank Terra for close, tight corridors, thought Copley.
Viggs confirmed clearance of the second barricade. Copley moved up to join him. With a thin, flexible vidpictor, its tiny lens peeking around the next corner, they surveyed the corridor between them and the final barrier to the tower's air control center. On the device's display, they could see another Tau nest, bristling with weapons, shimmering with projected energy shields. Copley felt an unpleasant tingle on the back of her neck.
The main room is right there, ma'am, said Viggs. The corridor goes from here right towards it, but at the door it splits off left and right, and they'll have squads covering the entrance from both directions. We can take it, but we won't be clear until we take down both those squads, and that'll have to be done at once.
Copley was silent, trying to work out what had the hairs on her neck standing up.
Ma'am,
said Viggs. Copley shook her head. Something was definitely wrong.
The Tau don't sit still if they can help it, she muttered,
mostly to herself. Suddenly, she grabbed his arm.
They're going to blow the walls. Everyone, against the back wall, right now!
Just a second too late. There was a ripple of explosions. Some of her